The rest of the day was spent getting the place into better shape, or getting started on that job anyway, since Beatrice kept insisting there was still a great deal to do. The house was big enough that all the men could stay inside, rather than having to use the bunkhouse out back. The kid took note Beatrice had her own room on the second floor, rather than sharing a room with Gray as he'd expected her to do. As far as he knew, nothing had gone on between the two of them during the trip from East Texas, but that didn't mean a whole lot. When camping out on the trail, privacy was at a minimum, and everybody was worn out from the day's travel. It was no place for romance. Now that they had reached their destination and were evidently going to stay for a while, possibly until the gang was ready to kill him, have Angus Morrell turn in his body for the reward and move on, the need to contact the Rangers became more urgent. The journey had given him plenty of time to think, but he hadn't figured out any way to get in touch with the Texas Rangers and let them know where he was. Brattle or one of the other outlaws had watched him all the time. They had the same sort of meal for supper that they'd been eating on the trail. Bacon, beans, and biscuits, with canned tomatoes and peaches.
Tomorrow I need to go to that settlement you mentioned, Alexander. If we're going to be here for a while, we need some proper food.
I said we were going to avoid the settlement as much as possible.
Yes, well, that's not possible right now. We need supplies. Brattle and Mr. Keene can take me.
Now, Waco. Too much of a chance someone might see him and recognize him.
Well, then, just Brattle.
All right, I suppose you're right. We're going to be here for a good long while, so we can't live on what few supplies we have left.
Good. It's settled.
After supper, Brattle came up to the kid and inclined his head toward the stairs.
Come on, Keene. Time for you to go to your room.
You're going
to
keep on locking me in like you did back at the plantation? I've been with you people for more than a week now. Don't you trust me yet?
Ain't a matter of trust. It's
just the way you do things, right?
Well, at least you understand.
It doesn't mean I like it.
Nobody said you had to.
Fine. Let's go.
When the door of the room assigned to him closed behind him and the key rattled in the lock, the kid looked around. A bed and a small table next to it were the only pieces of furniture in the room. A candle burned in a holder on the table. No chair, no wardrobe, as there had been at the plantation house. That was fine with the kid. His comfort didn't matter, as long as he got the job done. He went to the window and pulled the curtain back. He leaned closer to the window and peered out. He was on the second floor. It would be a simple matter to climb out through the window, hang from the sill, and drop to the ground. But it was possible, even probable, Brattle had posted at least one guard outside to keep an eye on that window. He had made it clear that while they wanted the kid as part of the gang, if he caused any problems, they might kill him. Trying to escape might just get him a bullet. Anyway, that would mean abandoning the mission. Getting away, finding the local law, convincing those star packers to get in touch with the Rangers, and setting up a raid on the old ranch, all before Gray realized the kid was gone and bolted with the rest of the gang. Well, those chances were practically non-existent, the kid thought. But he wasn't the sort of man to give up. That stubbornness was something else he had inherited from Frank Morgan. Despite that resolve, he put a hand on the window and tried to lift the pane, just to see if he could. If anybody asked him about it later, he could always say he was just trying to get a little fresh air. The window wouldn't budge. Earlier in the day, he had heard hammering and had assumed some of the men were carrying out repairs. Maybe that was true for part of the racket, but not all. The window was nailed shut. He couldn't go anywhere that way without breaking the glass. The racket of that would probably be heard all over the house. With a rueful shake of his head, the kid let the curtain fall closed. There was nothing left for him to do except what he had done the first night at the plantation house. Go to bed and get some rest. Since the room was warm and stuffy and the window wouldn't open, he stripped down to the bottom half of a pair of long underwear, blew out the candle, and stretched out on the bed. Beatrice had seen to it that some of the fresh sheets they had brought with them were placed on the beds, but the mattress smelled musty to the kid. He tried to ignore it as he rolled onto his side. It took him a moment to realize someone was unlocking the door and trying to be quiet about it. He quietly swung his feet to the floor and stood up. No one in the house had any reason to do him harm, at least not at that point. But he still didn't like the idea of somebody sneaking into his room. He moved quickly and quietly to the door and pressed himself to the wall so he was behind the panel when it opened. The door swung back. The corridor was dark. No light spilled into the room, only a faint glow indicating a lamp was still burning downstairs. A shadow moved against that glow. The figure it belonged to eased into the room.
Mr. Keene? Waco?
His nocturnal visitor was Beatrice. Guided by her voice, he reached out and placed his hand on her shoulder.
Miss Beatrice?
She pulled away from him.
Waco, is that you?
Who else would it be? I was locked in here, remember?
That wasn't my idea. I'm not sure why Alexander and Brattle don't trust you. It seems to me you're all on the same side.
You could say that.
His eyes had adjusted a little to the darkness, and he could vaguely make out her shape. She wore what appeared to be a light-colored robe.
I'm not trying to be rude, but what are you doing here? I don't reckon Alexander would take kindly to it if he knew you were in my room.
Why not?
Well, I don't think he's the sort of hombre who'd cotton to having somebody messing with his property.
I'm not Alexander's property. I'm not anybody's slave.
Well, then his lady friend.
Is that what you think I am?
It's pretty obvious, isn't it?
Obvious to you, maybe. I'm not Alexander's lady friend, Mr. Keene. I'm his sister. Half-sister, actually. He and I have the same father.
I didn't have any idea.
There was no reason you should. You didn't know any of us until a week or so ago. My mother was a servant who worked on the plantation after the war. She was an octoroon from Louisiana who had been a slave when she was a little girl. Her mother brought her to Texas after they were freed. They both worked for Alexander's father, and he took a fancy to my mother when she was 15. After I was born, she and my grandmother took me and ran away back to Louisiana.
All right. That's a pretty ugly story. How'd you wind up back in Texas?
My mother and my grandmother are both dead now. I didn't have anyone else. So I came back to Texas to claim my birthright.
Things don't work that way.
Why? Because I'm a bastard? Because some of my ancestors were slaves?
Take your pick. I'm not saying it's right, just telling you how the law would look at it.
That's probably true. Fortunately for me, when I showed up at the plantation and told Alexander my story, he welcomed me. He remembered me from when he was a boy and knew I was telling the truth. He said I was a member of the family. You see, he hates our father as much as I do.
Is that why he set the place on fire when we left?
I suspect that's right. He hasn't said anything to me about it, and I haven't asked him.
They were standing in almost complete darkness. The kid wanted to be able to see Beatrice's face. If he could see her, he would be able to judge better if she was telling him the truth. The kid recalled matches laying on the table.
I'm going to light the candle, if that's all right with you.
Go ahead.
He found one and snapped it to life with his thumbnail. Squinting slightly against the glare, he held the flame to the candle wick. It caught, and the flame strengthened, casting a circle of light into the room. The kid turned to see Beatrice easing the door closed. He had been right about the robe she was wearing. What he hadn't been able to tell was that it was silk and clung enticingly to her body. Her midnight hair was pulled back from her high forehead and tied behind her head. She was strikingly beautiful, and the kid knew he didn't have to worry about her being Gray's mistress. But she was Gray's half-sister, which might also make him protective of her. Besides, the kid had no interest in cluttering up his mission with unnecessary complications. He was interested, though, in finding out what had brought her to his room.
What's Alexander got against your father?
My father never recovered from losing his wealth and power because of the war. He let the plantation go downhill, and he became a lecher and a drunkard. He raped my mother, and she wasn't the only one. Eventually, his wife, Alexander's mother, confronted him about his behavior. And in a drunken rage, he choked her to death.
Good Lord.
When he saw what he'd done, he ran away. Alexander found his mother's body. He was only 10 years old. When the authorities discovered what had happened, they took him away. It was a horrible time for him.
I can imagine. This was after you'd already gone back to Louisiana with your mother and grandmother?
Yes, thank goodness. Otherwise, we would have been in the middle of that terrible mess, too. I didn't even know anything until I came back to Texas and went to the plantation to see Alexander. He told me what had happened and then asked me to stay.
Wait a minute. How did he wind up with the plantation? What happened to his father? Your father, too, I reckon.
The law caught up to him eventually. He had changed his name and became an outlaw. He was tried, convicted, and sent to prison for his crimes. The plantation was lost, of course. It went through several owners, but they were never able to get it back on its feet. By the time Alexander was grown and had made some money of his own, the place was empty when he came back.
Just like this one. So he was just squatting there, like he is here.
The difference is he had grown up in that house and considered it his by rights to do with whatever he wanted.
That's quite a story. The sort of thing they make melodramas out of. But it doesn't explain what you're doing here in my room tonight.
A flush spread across her lovely features. She lifted a hand to the robe's neckline and toyed with the silk.
Do I really have to explain that, Waco?
Yeah, you do. You've barely looked at me since the night Brattle brought me to the plantation. What changed your mind all of a sudden?
Nothing. Darn it, Waco. Why are you making this so difficult?
Because I figure on making some money working with your brother. And I'd just as soon not have him shoot me for bedding his little sister before I can cash in on the deal.
Listen, when I came to the plantation, I didn't know Alexander was an outlaw. It didn't take me long to figure it out, though. This isn't really the life I bargained for. I haven't said anything to him about it, but I'm afraid of what might happen.
So you want me to rescue you, and the two of us will run away together. Is that it?
You don't have to make it sound so crass.
Why me? Why not Brattle or one of the other men?
Do you really think Brattle will ever double-cross Alexander? Besides, you've seen what he's like. The same thing goes for the others. I've had enough of brutal men in my life. Besides, you're new here, like I am. You don't have the same ties to Alexander the rest of the men do.
You're the one who's related to him by blood.
I don't really mean anything. I don't even remember him from when I was a little girl. I was too young when my mother ran away from the plantation. For all practical purposes, I never laid eyes on Alexander Gray until about 3 weeks ago. It's true that he's been very kind to me, and I'm grateful to him for taking me in. I don't really want to betray him, but I don't want to spend the rest of my life cooking and cleaning for a gang of outlaws either.
Look, I owe your brother. I'd still be rotting in prison if it wasn't for him. I don't think I can help you.
Are you sure?
Beatrice's fingers went to the belt knotted around her waist.
I was on my own for a while after my mother passed away. I had to do some things I'm not proud of to survive. I've learned a lot. I know I could make it worth your while to help me, Waco.
The kid reached out to touch her arm and stop her from untying the belt.
Let me think about it. We're already here, so we might as well stay for a while.
Until you're such a part of the gang, you won't want to turn on Alexander?
I can't help you right now. That doesn't mean things will always be this way. I've got to see how it plays out.
All right. We'll give it some time. But can I trust you not to say anything to Alexander about this?
Hell, he doesn't trust me completely yet. He's made that clear. So I'd be a fool to tell him his sister was in my room in the middle of the night, wouldn't I?
I suppose so. Just don't take too long to make up your mind, Waco. I could change my mind, you know. It's a woman's prerogative, they say.
Let me take a look out in the hall before you leave. We don't want anybody spotting you sneaking out of here.
Especially since we didn't actually do anything. That would be a real shame, wouldn't it? To get in trouble over nothing.
I wouldn't say it was nothing. It's just not something yet.
He opened the back door enough to look out into the hall and see that it was empty. Then he went back to the table and blew out the candle before opening the door wide enough for Beatrice to slip through. In the darkness, she somehow found his face and brushed her lips across his cheek. Then she was gone, and the kid closed the door quietly behind her. The night certainly hadn't gone the way he expected, he thought, as he went back to the bed and stretched out on it. He wondered if Beatrice was reporting to Alexander Gray that Waco Keene hadn't fallen for the scheme, no matter how much she had tempted him. He wondered if she was really Gray's sister, or if Gray had concocted that melodramatic story as part of the plan to test the new recruit's loyalty. Everywhere the kid looked, there were unanswered questions, including the one of how he was going to get in touch with the Texas Rangers. And it didn't seem the answers were forthcoming anytime soon. He rolled over and went to sleep. The night passed quietly, and the next morning, Beatrice and Brattle went to the nearby settlement in one of the wagons. They came back that afternoon with supplies.
Any problems?
No. No one seemed to pay any attention to us. We didn't stop anywhere except at the general store.
Excellent. We're going to do our best to be good citizens around here.
The kid noticed they had bought enough provisions to last for several weeks. For several days, everyone concerned themselves with putting the ranch house back in good shape and cleaning up around the place in general. The kid did his share of the work without complaining, but he began to think he ought to speak up soon and ask Gray when they were going to pull their first job. He didn't think Waco Keene was the sort of hombre to do such menial work without getting tired of it. He still didn't have a gun, and Brattle or one of the other men continued keeping an eye on him all the time except at night when he was locked into his room. He said something about it to Gray, pointing out that if the house ever caught fire, he would be doomed if no one came to let him out.
That won't happen. You're worth too much to us, Waco.
How do you mean?
For your experience as a train robber, of course. We're counting on you.
Haven't seen any signs of it so far.
Soon, my friend. Soon.
The next day, the kid carried a couple of buckets of water into the kitchen for Beatrice.
Have you thought any more about what we talked about the first night we were here?
The kid glanced around to make sure none of the other men were close enough to overhear. He didn't want anybody carrying the news to Gray that he and Beatrice were keeping secrets with each other.
Don't worry, we're alone. Alexander is upstairs, and unless one of them followed you in, the rest of the men are outside. I wouldn't have said anything otherwise.
She came closer to him and put a hand on his arm.
So have you thought about it?
Reckon I have.
The kid had pondered the question of whether Beatrice had been telling him the truth that night, or if the whole thing was just part of some convoluted plot by Alexander Gray. If she had been telling him the truth, he wanted to find some way to help her. But it was going to have to wait until he had broken up the gang, he had decided, assuming he could even pull that off. He would certainly do what he could to see to it the law didn't treat her as if she were just another member of the gang.
Well, what you think? Can you do it?
What in blazes?
Grateful for the distraction, the kid hurried out of the kitchen. Gray appeared at the top of the stairs as the kid started across the big front room. The ringleader had a pistol in his hand and wore a surprised expression on his face.
Was that a shot I heard, Waco?
Gray started down the staircase.
I reckon so, boss.
The kid reached the front door first and grasped the latch.
Wait a minute. You're not armed.
The kid thought Gray was going to go first, but the man surprised him by pressing the pistol into his hand. If there was any more gunplay, Gray obviously wanted the kid to handle it. The kid jerked the door open and charged out to see what all the ruckus was about. A couple of men were rolling around on the ground, fighting. The kid recognized one of the combatants as a man called Dodge, a member of Alexander Gray's gang. The other man was a stranger. A saddled horse the kid hadn't seen before stood nearby. He quickly put everything together in his mind. The stranger had ridden up to the house. Dodge had challenged him, and somehow heated words had been exchanged, leading to the battle. The kid spotted a revolver lying on the ground, and the stranger's holster was empty. Clearly, the stranger had fired that shot, but it must have missed because Dodge didn't seem to be wounded. It was only a matter of time before the other men converged, drawn by that gunshot, but at the moment, the kid and Gray were the only witnesses to the battle. Suddenly, the stranger landed a solid punch to Dodge's jaw that sent him rolling away. The stranger snatched up the fallen colt and wheeled around, lining his sights on Dodge. The kid acted instinctively, firing before the stranger could pull the trigger. The stranger dropped the colt. He jerked his right arm back and cradled it against his body. Blood welled from the furrow the kid's bullet had plowed in his forearm.
Don't try it again.
You shot me!
You were about to shoot one of my pards. You're lucky I just winged you instead of killing you.
I wasn't gonna shoot him. I just didn't want him jumping me again.
Looked to me like you planned to ventilate him.
Dodge slapped dust off his shirt and pants.
That's the way it looked to me too, Waco. I'm much obliged to you for stopping him.
Dang blast it! What loco kind of place is this?
The stranger was short, no more than 5.5 feet tall, but his arms and shoulders were heavily slabbed with muscle. His high-crowned brown hat had fallen off during the fight, revealing close-cropped sandy hair. He was probably between 25 and 30, the kid judged, and his range clothes showed plenty of signs of wear and tear.
All I did was ride up to see about asking for a job. But after getting shot, I ain't so sure I'm gonna work here anymore.
You're a ranch hand?
Brattle and several other members of the gang came pounding around the corner of the house then, guns drawn. But Gray lifted a hand and motioned for them to take it easy, letting them know the situation was under control.
That's right. I've ridden for 3 or 4 outfits around here. You can ask the owners about me if you want. Name's Tyler.
Well, Mr. Tyler, what makes you think we'd be hiring here?
Rode by the other day and saw somebody was fixing the place up. Old Jonah Rankin had a pretty good spread here at one time. And I figured somebody finally bought the place from the county and was going to try and make a go of it again. Seeing as how I'm sort of between riding jobs.
Say no more. An understandable mistake, I suppose.
You want us to run this peckerwood off, boss?
Not at all. What sort of hospitality would that be, to shoot a man and then force him to leave?
It'd be more hospitable not to shoot at him at all.
Well, yes, I suppose.
Gray turned to Beatrice, who had followed him and the kid to the front door.
My dear, do you think you could patch up this young man's arm?
Of course. Come in, Tyler.
I ain't sure you should trust this short-growed runt, boss.
Short-growed runt, am I? Mister, I'm so tough, if I was any taller, it wouldn't be fair to all the other fellas in this part of the country.
It's all right, Brattle. I'm not going to offer Mr. Tyler a job, mind you, but there's no reason we can't be neighborly.
No job, huh? Are you sure about that? I'm a top hand, mister.
I'm sure you are, but I have all the riders I need right now.
Oh, well. Can't blame a fella for trying. No, I'm coming, ma'am. I'm mighty obliged to you for fixing me up.
The two of them went into the house. As the other men went back to work, Gray walked over to where the kid was standing.
Would you mind keeping an eye on our visitor, Waco? He seems to be exactly what he claims, a drifting cowboy, but I don't want to leave Beatrice alone with him.
That's probably a good idea, boss. You want your gun back?
No, I believe I'll let you keep it for now.
No? Well, in that case, I'd rather have something bigger, like a Colt 45, maybe.
Don't push your luck, my young friend. I said you can keep it for now, and as soon as Tyler rides away, I expect you to give that gun to Beatrice. Understand?
Sure. You just don't trust me yet.
We're getting there.
The kid nodded and followed Gray into the house. Gray went upstairs, and the kid walked into the kitchen to find Tyler sitting at the table with his bloody sleeve rolled up, while Beatrice swabbed at the bullet crease with a wet cloth.
Well, I sure appreciate you taking care of me like this, ma'am.
It's the least I can do. Now hold still. I'm gonna get some whiskey.
That's mighty kind of you. I could use a drink right about now.
It's to clean the wound, not to drink.
Oh.
I'll be right back.
She looked at the kid.
Don't let him run off.
I won't.
When she had left the room, he nodded toward the wounded arm Tyler had stretched out on the table.
For what it's worth, I was just trying to make you drop the gun. I really didn't mean to wing you like that. It was sort of an accident.
Tyler smiled as he looked down at the raw furrow on his forearm.
Well, I know.
Then he lifted his eyes to meet the kid's.
Not even Kid Morgan is that good of a shot.
The kid stiffened. His hand moved instinctively toward the gun at his waist. Tyler shook his head as if warning him not to try anything. His left hand moved over the thin layer of flour on the table, left over from Beatrice mixing the dough for biscuits that morning. His index finger swiftly traced a symbol in the white powder. He drew a circle first, then a five-pointed star in the middle of the circle, the same shape as the badge of the Texas Rangers. The kid's eyes widened slightly in surprise. Tyler's hand moved again, casually sweeping across the table and wiping out the design as if it had never been there. He smiled faintly as he met the kid's intent gaze. Everything was clear. Someone had actually followed the gang through the wilderness between the prison and the Gray Plantation, and someone, maybe the young man who called himself Tyler, had followed them from the plantation to the ranch in the Cross Timbers. The kid knew the young cowboy was his contact man from the Rangers. There was no time for them to say anything else. Beatrice came back into the kitchen carrying a bottle half filled with whiskey.
This is gonna sting.
She took a clean cloth and soaked it with the liquor.
Oh, I'm tough. I can stand it, ma'am. Especially if you'll smile at me while you're doing it.
She did smile as she began swabbing at the wound with the cloth.
Oof. It's not bad at all.
You should probably have a doctor take a look at this. It might need a few stitches, and I can't do that.
Yes'm. I'll go see Doc Stewart over in the settlement as soon as I get a chance. I hear tell he's pretty good sawbones.
Don't wait too long. You don't want it to fester.
No, ma'am.
Brattle came into the kitchen while Beatrice was wrapping a bandage around Tyler's forearm and tying it into place. He was carrying Tyler's Colt. He set the gun on the table and dropped five bullets beside it.
I unloaded this hog leg, just so you don't get tempted to use it again.
You don't have to worry about that, mister. This trouble was all just a big misunderstanding.
Well, don't misunderstand again. As soon as the lady's done patching you up, you need to haul your freight off this range.
Yes, sir. That's just what I intend to do. I never meant to stir up a ruckus.
That should do it. You take care of that wound, Mr. Tyler. Be sure to check the dressing.
Yes'm. I will.
Tyler looked at Brattle.
What about my hat?
It's still out there on the ground where it fell. You can get it as you're leaving.
Thanks.
Tyler got to his feet and smiled again at Beatrice.
And I'm obliged to you as well, ma'am, like I told you.
He glanced at the kid.
though I don't believe I'll thank you for shooting me, mister.
You wouldn't be welcome anyway.
Tyler looked back at Beatrice.
Ma'am, I don't know if you're partial to scenic views or not, but there's a hill about a half a mile west of here where you can see for a long way. It's mighty pretty up there. And since you're new around here, I thought you might like to have a look at it sometime.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Tyler. I'll do that.
The kid knew the ranger's words had been meant for him. Tyler was conveying a message. That hill would be his vantage point for keeping an eye on the ranch and on the kid. That didn't help much, since the gang still had him on a tight rein. But maybe in the future it would. Brattle and Tyler left the kitchen. Remembering what Gray had told him, the kid took the pistol from his waistband and set it on the table.
Alexander told me to give this to you when you finished working on Tyler.
He still doesn't trust you.
Evidently not, but he claims that's going to change soon.
Is anything else going to change soon, Waco?
We'll have to wait and see.
She wasn't aware that something had already changed. Something very important. The Texas Rangers were on the job. That evening after supper, the kid and Brattle were invited to Gray's office. He had taken over one of the rooms downstairs and turned it into his office and library, unpacking the books he'd been able to salvage from the water-damaged volumes in the plantation house. A big roll-top desk, left behind by the previous owner of the ranch, took up the center of the room. Gray put his finger on the map spread out on the table.
This is our first job, gentlemen.
As the kid leaned over to study the map, Gray traced his fingertip along a straight line marking the course of the railroad.
Fort Worth to the east, Weatherford to the west, and halfway between, a flag stop at a little settlement. That's where you'll be waiting for the train.
The name Weatherford rang a bell in the kid's mind. He thought back to when he was still Conrad Browning and the conversations he'd had with his father before the tragedy that had given birth to Kid Morgan. Frank Morgan, the drifter, had been born and raised in that part of Texas, he recalled. Frank had spent quite a bit of time in and around the town of Weatherford, including a visit a few years earlier when he'd met up with an old flame who was married to a judge. The kid didn't recall the woman's name, and Frank had been sort of closed-mouthed about the whole business, but at the time, Conrad Browning had gotten the feeling Frank suspected the woman's daughter might be his child. It was odd to think he might have a blood relative, a half-sister, so close by. Another memory worked its way into the kid's head. Frank had come back to the area to attend the young woman's wedding. She had gotten married to a Texas Ranger, the kid suddenly recalled. That ranger's name abruptly sprang into his mind. Tyler Beaumont.
Waco, something wrong?
No. Go ahead with what you were saying, boss. I'm listening.
Well, there's no time for wool gathering. This is important.
I know that. Sorry. You were saying that we'd stop the train there at that little place called Aledo?
That's right. It's ranching country all around there, so no one will think twice about a bunch of cowboys riding into the settlement. There's a little depot, which you'll take over so you can raise the flag and stop the train. Once you have it stopped, two men will deal with the engineer and fireman while the rest of you empty out the express car.
What'll it be carrying, boss?
A shipment of cash bound for banks in Midland, Odessa, and El Paso. There'll be a couple deputy U.S. Marshals guarding it, but that's all. The railroad doesn't want to draw attention to the shipment. It totals $60,000.
That's a damn fortune. We won't have to pull another job for a year.
Maybe we won't have to, but that won't stop us. This is just the beginning. We'll all be very rich men by the time we're finished, thanks to Waco here.
Looks to me like you've already got this planned out. I'm glad you busted me out of prison, mind you, but I don't see why you even need me.
Because of your expertise in robbing trains, of course. We're going to go over every detail of the plan so you can tell us whether you think it will work. If there's anything you want to change, you can let us know and we'll figure out some other way of going about it.
The kid frowned, encountering another tricky aspect of the role he was playing. He'd never robbed a train in his life. He had been a passenger on a couple that had been held up, but that was completely different. Still, as a businessman, he had developed a pretty good head for strategy and tactics, and since adopting the life of a fighting man, he had refined that ability. Mostly, knowing what to do was just a matter of common sense.
First thing is, what's the law situation down there? Is there a local star packer we're going to have to deal with?
See? You're already proven valuable. But I don't know for sure. I expect there'll be a town constable or maybe a deputy sheriff who has an office there, but we'll have to find out, won't we? Brattle, you'll need to send a couple boys over there to do some scouting. We have 5 days before that money shipment goes through.
I'll take care of it, boss. What else?
That's a good question. What about it, Waco? What else will we need to know?
The kid leaned over and rested his hands on the table as he studied the map again.
We'll need to figure out the best getaway. And for that, you're going to need a better map. I want one with as much detail as you can find on the surrounding countryside. Better yet, I want to take a look at the country myself.
I suppose it can be arranged, but you'll have to be very careful.
Sure. I don't want to do anything to mess this up.
The kid spent the next few days riding through the countryside between the ranch and the settlement where the train robbery would take place, which was about 15 miles south of the gang's current headquarters. Brattle and at least one other man were with him at all times. The kid didn't see any point in arguing about being guarded. He wanted the robbery to go off without any hitches. It was the last piece in the puzzle. He also wanted no one getting hurt. He figured the loot could be recovered later. He wasn't going to lead a posse straight toward the ranch, so his getaway plan was to start off in the opposite direction, south, before swinging west and then cutting north again. The terrain in all directions was hilly but not particularly rugged, so some hard riding would be needed to put distance between themselves and any pursuit. The hope was, of course, that the gang would have an insurmountable lead before any posse could be formed to give chase. In the evenings, Gray, Brattle, and the kid discussed the plan. If the train was on schedule, it would pass through the settlement at 3:05 in the afternoon. The depot was just a little one-room affair, set off to the side of a block of businesses facing the track.
Only one freight clerk works there, so he shouldn't present much of a challenge. Two men could take him, while the others wait nearby for the train to pull in.
He didn't want the townspeople noticing anything unusual was going on, so it was his suggestion the gang not move on the depot until about 3:15. Somewhere, Gray had gotten his hands on a topographical map, and in the evenings, the kid went over it with him and Brattle, marking the course he thought they should take and pointing out things that might slow them down.
I knew it was a good idea to get you to join us, Waco. You're going to be worth your weight in gold.
The day of the holdup dawned bright, hot, and still. When it was time to go, Brattle squinted at the brassy sky.
I don't like it, boss. Feels to me like there's a storm coming.
Nonsense. It's a beautiful day. There's not a cloud in the sky.
Right now there ain't. Thunderstorms can blow up mighty quick like this time of year.
Well, it shouldn't have any effect on what you're doing. If anything, a little rain will just make it harder for anyone to follow you.
He was right about that, the kid thought. A hard rain would wash away the prints their horses left. As they mounted up, Beatrice came to the door of the house and watched them. She had a worried look on her face. It was the first time since the gang broke the kid out of prison, and the first time since Beatrice had been reunited with her brother, that they were riding off to commit a crime, if she had been telling the kid the truth. Her gaze lingered especially long on him. He hoped Gray wouldn't notice that.
Good luck to all of you, although I'm sure you won't need it with Brattle and Waco leading the way. And speaking of Waco...
He held up a gun belt and holstered Colt and handed it to the kid.
I was wondering if I was going to have to do this unarmed.
The kid buckled on the weapon. He drew the revolver from its holster and opened the cylinder, only to look up in surprise.
It's unloaded.
That's right. Here's the way things work in this organization, Waco. You don't carry a loaded gun yet, and you don't wear a mask. The other men do. You're already a wanted man, so you don't have to worry about concealing your features. But none of them have posters out on them, and I'd like to keep it that way. I'm sure they would, too.
Nobody told me anything about this.
You've known all along that we have our own way of doing things. You also know I'm in charge here.
Sure. It just seems like if there's any shooting, I'm liable to be in a mighty bad spot with an unloaded gun.
Consider that an incentive to make certain there aren't any problems involving gunplay. We're in this to make money, not to shoot up the place.
Yeah, I guess. I don't much like the idea of parading my face around either. I may be wanted for breaking out of prison, but if I get tagged with new train robbery charges, every bounty hunter in the state will be looking for me.
That's something you'll just have to get used to. You are a fugitive, after all. None of us are.
The kid glanced around at the other men. He tried to look worried, angry, and desperate. They gave him flat, hard stares in return.
Fine. As long as I get my share.
Don't worry. You will.
Let's ride, then.
The kid didn't look back, but he could feel Beatrice watching him as he and the other men rode south. Without being too obvious about it, he glanced toward the hill to the west Tyler had mentioned. If the stocky ranger was up there, keeping an eye on the ranch through high-powered field glasses. He was bound to see them riding away and could probably guess they were headed out to pull a robbery. The kid wondered if he should make some sort of unobtrusive sign, then decided against it. They were probably too far away for the ranger to even see anything like that. He was on his own. A line of ominous dark blue clouds had moved up on the southwestern horizon by the time the gang neared their destination. Brattle eyed those clouds suspiciously.
I told you it was gonna storm.
It'll be all right. That won't stop us from doing what we need to do.
A range of low hills overlooked the settlement. As the riders headed down the slopes toward the block-long row of buildings making up practically the entire town, the kid's eyes followed the railroad tracks running straight as a string east toward Fort Worth and west toward Weatherford. Everything was quiet and peaceful at the moment, but it wouldn't stay that way, the kid knew. There were only a few residences in the settlement, just enough to provide homes for the people who ran the half-dozen businesses, which included a couple of mercantiles, a drugstore, a restaurant, a saddle shop, and a ladies' dress shop. Those establishments depended on the cattle spreads surrounding the settlement for their existence. The families who owned the ranches and the cowboys who worked for those outfits furnished customers for the businesses. In the middle of the week, Alito was a pretty sleepy place. A couple of horses were tied up at the hitch rack in front of the restaurant, and a wagon was parked in front of one of the general stores. That was encouraging. The fewer people around when the gang stopped and boarded the train, the less likely anybody would try to interfere. They appeared to be nothing more threatening than half a dozen cowhands as they rode around the block of buildings to the front. The kid looked at the depot, which was a small red brick building about 50 yards from the eastern end of the block. The road they had been following crossed the railroad tracks next to the depot and continued on south. Alexander Gray had given the kid a turnip watch and assured him it kept perfect time. The kid took the watch out of his pocket, flipped it open, and saw that the hour was 2:35, a half hour until the train was due. 10 minutes or so before he and Brattle would enter the depot and take the freight clerk prisoner. In the meantime, the other four outlaws would split up, two men going to each of the mercantiles. They wouldn't do anything to draw attention to themselves. When they heard the train's whistle as it approached the settlement, they would converge on the depot. Along the way, they would pull their bandanas up to mask the lower halves of their faces.
I told you, we'll be lucky if it don't become a cyclone. You've always got to worry about that this time of year.
I think I'm going to worry more about other things.
For one, he was curious whether or not Tyler had followed them to the settlement. If he had, he might be tempted to interfere with the train robbery. That would be a lawman's instinct, after all, to step in whenever he saw a crime being committed. The kid was sure Tyler had strict orders to stay out of whatever happened and hoped the young ranger would follow those orders. The arrival of a lawman might set off a shooting scrape and ruin everything. The scouting carried out by the men had determined that the settlement had no constable, only a deputy sheriff who covered that whole part of the county and wasn't there very often. The kid hoped the man was far away. Brattle sat down on the steps leading up to the high boardwalk running in front of the businesses, took out the makings, and started rolling a quirly. The kid lounged against a post beside him. The other four men went into the general stores as planned. No one else was on the street.
Looks good. With some good luck, we'll light a shuck out of here before anybody even knows what's happening.
How long have you been working for the boss?
Long enough to know he don't like folks asking a bunch of damn fool questions about him. And long enough to know if I do what he says, I'll wind up a lot better off.
Didn't mean to pry. Just passing the time of day, that's all.
It'll pass just fine without you saying anything.
The kid realized Brattle was nervous. Maybe it was because of the weather. Or maybe he always got that way before a job. It didn't really matter. As long as the kid could count on Brattle to hold up his end of the chore, that was all he cared about. Glancing toward the west, the kid saw a lone man about 400 yards out riding toward the settlement. His eyes were sharp, but he couldn't make out any details at that distance, except the rider didn't seem to be in any hurry.
Somebody coming.
I see him. Probably just a cowhand, like we're supposed to be. His boss sent him into town to pick up something at the mercantile. Or else he sneaked off to get himself a phosphate or some licorice at the drugstore.
The kid hoped that was the case, but it might be a complication they didn't need. The man could be armed and tempted to use his gun if he realized the train was being held up. The kid didn't want anybody to die. Not him, not a member of the gang, and certainly not any innocent citizens.
Should we go on over to the depot before that hombre gets here?
Let's wait a few more minutes. It won't hurt to see where he's going before we make our move.
Still taking his time, The man rode into the settlement, but instead of heading for the block of businesses, he angled his horse toward the depot.
Damn it.
Having someone else at the depot when he and Brattle went in to take it over was definitely a complication they didn't need. It was even worse than that, he realized a moment later. The newcomer swung down from his saddle and tied his mount's reins to an iron hitching post next to the red brick building. As he turned toward the door, he glanced in the direction of the kid and Brattle, as if wondering who the two strangers lingering in front of the general store were. The threatening clouds in the southwest continued to move closer, but the sun was still shining brightly over the town. That sunlight reflected from something fastened beside the breast pocket of the man's shirt. That object, glinting in the sun, had to be a law badge. The deputy sheriff had shown up at the wrong place and the wrong time, and all hell would likely break loose with the kid powerless to stop it.
It's that damn deputy. Why'd he have to show up here today of all times?
This is bad luck, all right. But it doesn't mean we're going to abandon the plan.
As they watched the deputy step into the depot, Brattle's hand dropped to the butt of his gun for a moment. His fingertips caressed the smooth walnut grips as if drawing strength from them.
We'll have to kill the stupid SOB. That's all there is to it.
There won't be any killing unless it's absolutely necessary.
The kid tugged his hat brim lower.
Let's go. Follow my lead.
Brattle stood up from the boardwalk steps. The kid couldn't tell if he was going to cooperate or not. A gust of wind hit suddenly, swirling dust around the two tall figures crossing the open ground. Bright fingers of lightning clawed across the blue-black wall of clouds. The sun still shone where they were, making the clouds look even darker and more threatening. Brattle paused right outside the door of the red brick building. He pulled up his bandana and settled it across his nose. With his hat brim pulled low, most of his face was concealed. He put his right hand on the butt of his gun and reached for the doorknob with his left. The kid beat him to it, grasping the knob and twisting it. He wasn't going to give Brattle the chance to go in shooting. He threw the door open and swiftly stepped inside. Brattle crowded in behind him. The kid's gaze took in the scene instantly. The deputy sheriff stood in the depot's one room, an elbow propped on one end of the counter. At the other end were scales for weighing freight. A stocky, middle-aged man who wore his gun with the butt tilted forward, the deputy was shooting the breeze with the freight clerk perched on an empty, overturned crate. The clerk was younger, skinnier, and wore spectacles. He was dressed in black trousers and a white shirt with sleeve garters. Both men turned their heads to look at the newcomers, and both jaws dropped in surprise as they saw the bandana mask covering Brattle's face. The kid knew the deputy's instinct was to grab for his gun. Brattle, using that as an excuse to shoot the man down, was already drawing his revolver. The kid leaped forward, knowing he had only a split second to act. In a blur of speed, his empty revolver leaped from his holster to his hand. He struck with the quickness of a snake, bringing the gun barrel down on the deputy's head. The kid kept moving, pinning the freight clerk against the wall, while at the same time he jammed the Colt's barrel under the clerk's chin.
Give us any trouble, and I'll blow your brains out. I'm gonna let you go, but if you so much as squawk, you'll be dead a half second later. You understand what I'm telling you?
With that, the gun barrel moved back slightly from his throat.
I got it, mister.
You better not be lying, you little peck of wood. That's Waco Keene holding a gun on you, and they just as soon shoot you as look at you.
The kid gave Brattle a quick, hooded glance, the same way the real Waco Keene would have reacted to having his name tossed around in the middle of a robbery. Gray wasn't taking any chances on the kid not being identified as Waco Keene. Brattle had orders to throw the name out while there were witnesses present. There was no time to worry about that. The kid moved back a step. He kept his left hand against the clerk's chest, holding the man against the wall. The deputy hadn't budged since he sprawled on the floor. The kid glanced down at him, saw to his relief the man was breathing. He also saw the deputy's gun had fallen out of its holster when he collapsed. Moving quickly, the kid pouched his empty iron, bent down and scooped the deputy's Colt from the floor. Its grips rested comfortably against the palm of his hand. The weight of the weapon felt good too. Brattle stiffened. The kid knew what the outlaw was thinking. He should have grabbed the lawman's gun while he had the chance. The kid was armed, and that might change everything. The kid knew it might not change a thing. He still wanted the robbery to take place successfully. Giving Brattle a curt nod, he tried to make him understand the plan would continue just as it was supposed to. There wasn't going to be any double cross.
Train's early.
The kid gave the clerk a hard look.
You're gonna step out there and raise the signal for the train to stop, amigo. Got that?
I'm not supposed to.
Don't even think about trying to run away. We'll both have our guns pointed right at you. If you do anything but raise that signal, we'll kill you. At this range, we can't miss.
So don't try anything funny. He'd be dead mighty quick if he do.
Just don't... Please just don't hurt the engineer. He's my father-in-law.
Well, ain't that cozy. Both of you working for the same railroad.
Don't worry. Nobody's gonna get hurt as long as they do what they're told. Just after the money in the express car.
What money?
The kid thought he was telling the truth. The clerk didn't know about the shipment of cash bound for the banks in West Texas.
You let us worry about that. It's our job. Your job is to make sure that train stops. Now get out there and raise the flag.
The flag was actually a red metal sign attached to a pole, raised and lowered by means of a lever. Brattle opened the depot's rear door, the one closest to the tracks, and the kid motioned with the deputy's gun for the freight clerk to follow orders. Still pale, the clerk stepped out of the building, walked the 10 feet or so to the signal, and reached up to grasp the lever and pulled it down. The signal rose, letting the engineer know he needed to stop at the settlement.
Good job! Now get back in here!
The clerk turned, and for a second, the kid saw something he didn't like in the man's eyes behind the spectacles. It was the wild hope he could leap away and escape being shot if he was fast enough.
Don't try it.
The defiance went out of the clerk's body with a visible slumping of his shoulders.
Don't kill me, mister, please. I did what you told me.
Get on in here.
The clerk entered the depot. Brattle closed the door behind the young man. Then, with startling suddenness, Brattle's gun rose and fell. The clerk fell to his knees and then pitched forward onto his face. He lay on the depot floor, unmoving except for a tendril of bright red blood worming its way out of his ear.
What the hell?
Didn't want to have to be keeping an eye on him while we were busy, so I thought I'd knock him out for a while.
The kid dropped to one knee beside the clerk and reached out to roll the man onto his back. The clerk's eyes were turning glassy, and his chest was still.
You killed him!
Reckon I hit him a little harder than I meant to.
Rage welled up inside the kid. Brattle had committed cold-blooded murder right in front of him, and for a second, the kid was tempted to use the deputy's gun and ventilate the outlaw. Brattle was watching him closely. The kid knew if he made a move to fire, Brattle would return his shots. In the close confines of the little train station, chances were good both of them would die. The kid controlled his emotions and straightened.
Well, I guess he won't be telling anybody Waco Keene ramrodded this holdup anyway.
See how well things work out?
After a short wait, the train came to a stop. It was time for the gang to get to work. The kid went to the front door of the depot and looked out. The other four outlaws had heard the train approaching and converged as they were supposed to. All four men were near the depot and had their masks pulled up. Two of them split off and headed for the locomotive to take care of the engineer and fireman. The kid turned to Brattle and nodded. They went out the rear door onto the small platform. Out of habit, the engineer had brought the train to a stop with a freight car next to the platform, since passengers rarely boarded there. Most of the time when the signal was up, it meant somebody had something they wanted to ship. The express car was right behind the freight car. As the kid and Brattle hurried toward its door, the kid glanced toward the engine. One of the outlaws leaned out from the cab and gave him a thumbs up to let him know the engineer and fireman had been taken prisoner and were under control. That was one less thing to worry about. The kid reached up and hammered a fist on the express car door.
Big wreck up the line! Emergency train's coming! You fellas are gonna have to move over onto the siding to let them through.
Who the hell are you?
Here comes the conductor.
The kid looked over Brattle's shoulder. The conductor was hurrying forward from the caboose. Brattle was standing with his back to the blue-uniformed man, so the conductor couldn't see the mask over the outlaw's face.
Here now, what's going on? Did I hear you say something about an emergency?
Brattle jabbed a gun barrel into the conductor's chest.
Yeah, it's an emergency, all right. You're gonna get a hole blowed right through if you don't convince those fellas in the express car to open up.
Oh my God, don't shoot!
The conductor's hand dipped toward the pocket of his coat, and the kid knew he was going for a small pistol. It was a foolhardy move, but conductors were known for their scrappy nature. The kid stepped in and grabbed the man's arm, wrenching it behind him before he could reach the gun. Dipping into the man's pocket, he pulled out the pistol.
Don't try anything else. We don't want to kill you.
Maybe Keene don't, but I don't mind blowing you to hell, mister.
Just get them to open the door.
There are two deputy marshals in there, and the express messenger is armed too.
Two of the other outlaws ducked around near the end of the express car, stepping over the coupling. After checking out the other cars, they had run along the far side of the train so their movements wouldn't be visible from the row of businesses.
Blasted, what's going on out there? Redmond, are you there?
Open up, Ketchum. There's a problem up the line. I need to talk to you about it.
The kid nodded to the conductor.
You just might live through this, mister.
The kid motioned for Brattle to step back against the side of the car. He did the same, positioning himself on the other side of the express car door. They kept their guns pointed at the conductor. Despite that threat, the man was unable to conceal the fear on his face. As one of the deputy marshals guarding the money shipment stepped into the doorway, he got a good look at the conductor and realized instantly that something was wrong.
Oh, crap!
He started to swing up the double-barreled shotgun he held. The kid acted faster, reaching up, grabbing the man's belt, and heaving him out of the car. The shotgun went flying, and the lawman plowed face first into the cinders of the roadbed.
Drop him!
Brattle pointed his gun into the car. The other two outlaws crowded up behind him. The men in the car weren't going to surrender without a fight. As the gunfire started up, the deputy marshal the kid had yanked out of the car stumbled to his feet. The kid wrapped him on the head with the Colt, stretching him out senseless on the ground. A little sick because he knew Brattle and the others had been shooting to kill, he looked into the express car and saw its two defenders lying on the floor in bloody heaps. He couldn't let on how he was feeling. So he grabbed the conductor by the collar and roughly shoved the man toward the door.
Get in there and open the safe. Don't waste your breath telling me you can't. I know good and well you can. And unless you want to wind up like those two, you will.
Alexander Gray would pay for this, he vowed. Either by death or imprisonment, the outlaw mastermind would pay. It was the only thing that would lessen the stain of blood on the kid's own hands. At gunpoint, he forced the conductor into the car. The man fumbled a key from the pocket of the dead messenger and took another key from his own pocket. It took both to open the safe. When the thick steel door swung back, it revealed half a dozen heavy canvas bags on shelves inside the safe. Brattle backhanded the conductor, knocking him off his feet and stunning him. Then Brattle dragged one of the bags out of the safe, jerked it open, and reached inside to pull out a banded sheaf of $20 bills.
This is it!
Brattle waved the money triumphantly. He stuffed the bills back in the bag and started handing the sacks to the other men. The robbers leaped out of the car, taking the sacks of money with them. The kid had one of the sacks in his left hand. It was heavy, but not as heavy as his heart. Anger burned fiercely inside him at the thought of those three dead men. The outlaws swung up into their saddles almost as one. The kid lowered his head against the sudden downpour. Like the other men, he was soaked to the skin in a matter of moments. No one would be able to come after them in the deluge, he told himself. The rain and the gloom hid them from sight as they fled, and any hoof prints that their horses left would be swiftly washed away. But not the blood, the kid thought. That was going to take time. A lot of time.